Okay. Mm-hmm.
Your work.
Blog Talk Radio.
Man, the listen legend.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
All right, here we go, America. How come sports are the 12th man? We got a lot to talk about tonight, people. Tom Brady with the big pass play to Chris Hogan. Third and one.
Hold on. I can't live like
I love it. We can't live like what?
Chris Hogan again down the middle.
Oh, we're having some fun. Look at Rob trying to bust his chops, get his little game calling chops. I love it. Hey, welcome, of course, to Talking Sports with 12th Man on a really crazy, busy Sunday. But, again, we wanted to definitely show you love. Get this sports talk in, as we always do, from the studio, all that good jazz. And, of course, I'm your man, Dre, ready to chop it up with my boys, my fellas, who are trying to avoid upsets as we speak. But let's check in first and foremost with JQ. How are you feeling this evening, sir?
I'm doing better. Everybody knows who listens to the show knows I'm a Bengals fan. That was tough today, but you know you gotta move on, I guess. So I'm ready to talk to sports with my fellas. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, man. As always, think of this as a way to kind of like as therapy, if you will. Man, I get it, man. Last week was rough, man. Whenever Saints, Falcons, man. But I feel you, man. That's what we do, man. And without further ado, we got to show in with the Raging Cajun, Rob Ford. How you feeling, Rob?
Man, doing great. Okay. You know, I felt JQ's pain with the way the Bengals lost that game. I really did. Yeah, you know, I was actually watching the end of that game, and the Bengals go up, get a touchdown, go up 21-20, and then just left Antonio Brown wide open down the middle of the field. That one was a tough one to watch.
Yeah, he got a little help. That's a pick play they didn't call, but I ain't gonna hold up the show for that. So y'all go ahead.
Yeah, it's a lot of controversy involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all good. Like I said, man. Again, we're here for you, JQ, man. We're here for the therapy support as we always do, because we fam, bro. All right. Again, if you want to reach out to your boys, also help JQ heal here. The one number you can call is always the 424. The 243-9519. And again, we got to stress that, again, this is a sports talk show. Now, obviously, we talk about life, a lot of life issues and whatnot, too, but we definitely want to keep it from a sports perspective. And if we have to go down a different path, which we did a little last week, you know, we can, but we definitely want to acknowledge that we do appreciate the calls and all that love, too. So, again, maybe call in, keep it focused, if you will. And the trigger has no heart, as we always like to say. We'll cut you off very, very quickly. But, again, that's the number to call, 424-243-9519. Also follow us on the Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And last but not least, follow us on Facebook. You go to Facebook.com. If you type in Talking Sports with the 12th Man or 12th Man Sports, you will find us as well. All right, gentlemen, let's kick this off here. And a pretty big game here. Let's talk about the right off the gut. Right off the get-go, let's talk about the Rams and the Broncos. And, Rob, let's kick it off with a quick recap, sir.
Yeah, just a quick update here. Tom Brady just runs in a touchdown, gives the Patriots a lead 37-33. But
there you go,
getting
JQ.
Back to the game that Andre just talked about here, the Rams and the Broncos. Rams stay undefeated, go 6-0. Broncos play them tough. Actually, the Broncos did a very good job defending the pass for the Rams today. Jared Goff probably had his most quiet game of the season, 14 out of 28 for 201 yards.
Sucks,
even the INT. Robert Woods was probably the only highlight in the passing game, had 109 yards receiving on 7 catches. But Todd Gurley was a beast in the running game. Denver couldn't stop him. 28 carries, 208 yards, 2 touchdowns. helped the Rams to stay undefeated and big road victory to go 6-0 and kind of a homecoming for Wade Phillips going back to Denver, the defensive coordinator. Case Keenum put up 322 yards for the Broncos and 25 out of 41, two TDs and INT. Broncos struggled running the football today, but Emmanuel Sanders, 7 catches, 115 yards, and a touchdown in the loss. Rams, we'll see. Might be the only undefeated team in the league if the Chiefs lose tonight.
Yeah, and Kupp getting that terrible horsepower tackle, and that's why he outlawed it. It was somebody who was trying to come back and play. I don't know how that's possible because he got carded off. But yeah, Todd Gurley was a man. I was sitting here watching Red Zone, and that
he did come back in.
Did he come back in again? Yeah, that's crazy. I thought his season was over the way he went down on that horsepower tackle. I'm surprised there wasn't a fight. But yeah, Todd Gurley was ridiculous in that game. And Case Keenum just still doesn't look right to me. He has flashes, but he looks like, like Brock looked like a couple years ago, where he has flashes, then he makes bad plays. And I don't know if you saw when Chad Kelly came in to do the kneel down at the end of the first half. The Denver crowd started clapping and erupted, like, yeah, bring him in the game. So I don't know if they got some controversy brewing over there in Denver. But, I fully expected the Rams to win that game. They just a more talented team. And they got a better coaching staff in terms of offensively in Sean McVay. So, he's unleashing Todd Gurley. I'm glad Todd Gurley got that contract extension because they are burning him up with the touches. And I'm glad he got his money while he was young because I can't see him having a super long career because he's a monster. But he's getting a lot of wear and tear on that body.
28 carries, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, and he had a couple of major injuries in college, too, that he's been able to overcome.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember whenever Falcons, he was sitting there, and we were thinking about drafting him, then we were kind of – things kind of played out, man, and we ended up, pulling in the direction too. But that's crazy. But just a quick note then, obviously shout-out to my barber, Alex. He is a huge Broncos fan. He's like, man, we got – he hates Case Keenum, man. So he thinks that's him a weakness with the Broncos. And I don't know. I don't know if this is totally Case's fault in this instance too, man, as Rob went over the stats. Just like I said, they just kind of fed Gurley, and they just couldn't shut him down. And I think that's the first time that Broncos have allowed a rusher to kind of go off like that, man. So, for the defense, man. So, it's all good, Alex, man. We'll see if they can kind of get everything restarted. But again, Terrell Davis ain't walking through that door, man. So they got to figure out the running back for real, man. I don't think they quite figure that, man. Yeah, so good.
It ain't that. It's John Elway ain't walking through the door. That running game is really not bad. Philip Lindsay, that's not the problem. It's the trigger man that's the issue for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. We were talking about that. Like I said, I was giving a hard time, too, because I was like, how many running backs do you have? He was like, give me all five of his running backs. Like, yeah, it's just, you got so many, like, if you have five running backs, you don't have a running back. That's what it seems like. You don't have a guy. But, there's a couple things that they thought they had that solved, man. But, again,
the best thing Denver has going for them is those pass rushers, Von Miller and the rookie Bradley Chubb. That's the best thing they have going for them. But, you have to have a nice lead to unleash those pass rushers, too.
True indeed. It's all about. Let's talk about another game, the second topic here, the Bears at the Dolphins. And, it's kind of crazy that, we had the breaking news story about Tannehill not getting a chance to play, and then Brock Osweiler and I'm sure Dolphin fans are probably like, pick your poison there. But surprisingly, the Dolphins were able to pull it off, man, against the Bears here. Go ahead about this one, Rob.
The interesting thing about that game is in overtime, Dolphins got the ball first, go right down the field, looked like they're about to score a touchdown and win the game. Kenyon Drake fumbles on a goal line.
Wow.
And the Bears gets the ball. And the Bears go right down the field, get in the field goal range. I thought once the Bears got in the field goal range, they got a little bit too conservative. They wound up having to try for a long kick, 53 yards, and Cody Parkey missed it. Dolphins get the ball right back and go down the field and kick the game-winning field goal and win the game. It's crazy the way it happened. Looked like I said, the Dolphins was going to score a touchdown on the first drive in overtime, and Drake fumbles on the goal line. So I'm thinking the Bears are going to win it now, but the Dolphins had 9 lives in this game, was able to come back and win the game in overtime, 31-28. Mitch Trubisky put up 316 yards, 3 touchdowns and an INT. Taylor Gabriel had 5 catches, 110 yards receiving. Brock Osweiler, you know, the two INTs really hurt them, but they were still able to pull a game out. He threw for 380 yards on 28 out of 44, three TDs. Frank Gore, man, he's got to be like 80 years old, had over 100 yards rushing today, 15 carries, 101 yards. Dolphins pulled it out. Hey, the Dolphins are 4-2. Depending on what happens out of this game here, I mean, as of now, they're in first place, but if the Patriots win tonight, they'll take that spot back.
Nice.
Yeah, I was watching a good piece of that game because I say I was watching Red Zone for a good portion of the day. And what stood out to me is the fact that that Chicago defense, that bottom Chicago defense, was very ordinary. And I don't know if it was because it was really hot in Miami, but I saw on two occasions, I believe they had got a touchdown lead, and they let Brock Osweiler basically just throw like a tunnel wide receiver screen to Albert Wilson twice, and he went yards from like 60 yards and like 75 yards on two separate occasions. It's like, wow, Chicago, this defense has been playing so well all year. You know, they really let down Chicago today. Trubisky wasn't necessarily great. He made some bad decisions in that game, but he ended up with a decent stat line. But the Bears defense had a chance to close that game out in the fourth quarter when they had the lead, and they let Miami get back into it and tie the game. So that was my takeaway from it, that they let Brock freaking Osweiler come in there and do that to them when they've been, you know, playing everybody pretty tough. You know, at least Khalil Mack, I don't know if it was the heat. It was, I want to say it was 90 degrees. They said it felt like 100. And, you know, you're just not really used to that in mid-October. But they've got to do better. That defense, you can't anoint them quite yet because they went down there and made Brock look like an all-star.
That's crazy. And I can't wait to hear, you know, draft predictions too because, again, Rob, we're going to figure out to do the Dolphins have a QB problem, man, because, again, it seems like this, again, Tannehill and then something's not right, man. But, you know, I know for sure that Brock Osweiler is not the answer for sure, as we talk about too. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, what a stiff arm by Rob Gronkowski.
Love it. Next topic, are the Seahawks back? JQ, are the Seahawks back?
No. Let's pump the brakes because they played a really terrible Oakland team. And that's just the short. I mean, that Oakland team, ooh, Gronk. Yeah, they're just bad. They're paying a lot of money for a bad coach, $10 million a year. That's crazy. I'm gonna reserve judgment on that. You know, that was almost like a preseason exhibition game. You go in thinking, okay, we can win this game if we just don't make mistakes. And Russell Wilson is still really dynamic. Don't get me wrong. I think they're going to be a 7-9, 8-8, 9-17 kind of in there. But I want to announce them back. They got the cure to ails them, which is the Oakland Raiders.
Rob, let's take you right in that.
Well, I will say this. Seattle here in the last 4 weeks, they're 3-1 in the last four games. They got off to an 0-2 start. They've been playing some really competitive football here. They had a really good opportunity to stop the Rams and give the Rams their first loss last year. Don't sleep on this team. Russell Wilson can possibly get this team back in a wild card hunt. They're not going to win the division. The Rams are just Rams have already gone into Seattle and won by a field goal, and they'll probably beat them at home too. But don't sleep on this team as a possible wild card with the way the when you look at the NFC right now, you got the Carolina Panthers at 3-2, and I'm not all that impressed with them. Seattle's right there in the mix there. You have the Vikings 3-2-1, the Bears 3-2, and so maybe one of those teams can find themselves in the wild card hunt along with Green Bay, who are 2-2-1 from that division. And the NFC East, if you're not winning it, only teams going to playoffs in that division is the team that wins it. So the Seahawks could possibly be that somewhere in that 6-8 spot in the NFC that can possibly put them in a wild card hunt, especially the way they've been playing the last 4 weeks. And defensively, you think of all the players that they've lost over the last few years, they've been playing really good defense here the last few weeks.
You know who they are? I'm not saying they're bad, necessarily a bad team. When I say back, I'm thinking a 10-11-12 win team. I don't think that's who they are. We talked about them earlier, and a team like them earlier in the year, and that's the Jets, who have a good defense, and they're going to keep them in the games, but you're like, you know, they're not going to really run away from anybody. That's what I think Seattle is. You're not going to come in and walk over them. They still have a little bit of pride left on D. They still got Russell Wilson, who can extend plays, and they're going to always be competitive. When I hear back, I'm thinking, you know, man, they're going to come in, and they're just going to kill us, yada, yada, yada. That's not who Seattle's going to be, but they're going to be tough. They're going to be competitive. You're going to be in a fight when you play Seattle. and they're going to win some and lose some. I still feel like they're going to be 8-8, 9-17 in there. But the way that you're right, the way the NFC is shaping up, that might be good enough to get a wild card.
Yep.
Yeah, and you're right. They're not a Super Bowl championship team, not at all. But they could possibly, at best, be a 5 or 6 seed in the NFC at best. And if they're not that, I think they just missed the playoffs.
I agree with that.
Good call, Rob. Rob's been pretty much upending us on the Chiefs-Patriots game, so go ahead and throw your little 2 cents in the ring here.
Well, I think the Patriots just kicked another field goal, so they got a 7-point lead here, 40-33. A real competitive game. You know, two high-powered offenses here going at it in this game here. Mahomes kind of settled down a little bit. Early on, he was getting Belichicked. But now, you know, he's starting to figure things out a little bit. And that was expected. The young quarterback, Belichick, was going to have some different schemes and different things to throw at him. And he's overcome some of them here, overcome from those earlier drives early in the game. And he's got the Chiefs right back in this thing.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Smells like overtime.
We still got 3 minutes, 15 seconds to go. The Chiefs about to get the ball down 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is gonna come right down to it. And like I said, I wonder if Roger Goodell is happy with the NFL's happy. Man, these are a lot of high scoring games. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, man. It's been a little crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just the fact that defense is, you know, they're kind of like letting the play off. It's just it's kind of like changing, man. It's just. I mean, I guess it's exciting too, but I don't know. And to see Patrick Mahomes on this thing, man. So we'll keep an eye on this game as well, too, man. So good call on that. We're gonna keep moving here with the topics here, and let's talk about the Giants. Why are the Giants 1-5, Rob?
Well, it's a lot of reasons. quarterback play, obviously. I mean, the questions are arising again. Wow.
Oh,
just like that.
Oh.
Wow. That Mahomes makes some incredible throws.
Wow.
Man,
wow.
Did
just like that.
Did you just throw a touchdown?
Yeah.
Yes.
A touchdown.
Oh, my God. That guy dropped it. Yeah. Okay.
Damn. You're right. JQ just called it. We might have overtime, but he still got Tom Brady. He still left a lot of time on the clock for Tom Brady, 3 minutes and 33 seconds. So,
one
wow.
Pass. Look at that. That's
this game
crazy.
Is
not
like
really
a video game.
This is like a arena.
And
yeah,
Tariq Hill has got blazing
yep.
speed.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, getting back to our topic, sorry, you all, but why the Giants are 1-5? So the question has come up again, did the Giants make a mistake by passing up on a quarterback? Saquon Barkley is just a dynamic athlete. And I'm not going to argue with that pick a whole lot. I mean, obviously, it is up for debate. You know, running back, you may not have with about 5 to 8 years in your prime. Quarterback these days, if you get a great one, you could probably have him for 15 years. Eli Manning is just not the same quarterback, people. And it's time for the Giants to find a quarterback desperately. Now, that being said, their offensive line that he's playing with is atrocious. But he's also making a lot of bad decisions. He's not stepping up in the pocket. He's not helping his offensive line either. So you got a combination of the quarterback position. You have a combination of the offensive line. And their defense is interesting because they'll look good, and then all of a sudden they'll give up a big play. They've given up way too many big plays this year, and that's really hurting their defense as well. So they have a lot of problems right now. But they I think ultimately – they have to fix that offensive line, and they have to fix the quarterback position. That's going to have to be their main priority going into the offseason.
Yeah, and you know what? Real quiet, like we talked about it before, thinking that Giants defense is going to be better than it was. I agree with those points you're making. I think the Giants defense is getting a bit of a pass here when they shouldn't because, you know, they went out spending that money to try to beef up that defense, and they're part of the problem. They're getting straightened. I don't know if that's a part of – just being on the field too long because the Giants' offense isn't so inept. That I think that's a piece of it. But, you know, Eli Apple, as much as I hate to say it, looks like a bust. You know, Landon Collins isn't really making the plays he was making before. They don't really have a great linebacking core. I mean, that Giants' defense isn't really playing great, if you want to be honest. They have a lot of problems. They have a team chemistry problem.
Yeah, Livian Vernon's doing good, but.
Yeah, that's about it, though. And we talked about it before, that Philly Giants predictions. I was like, I feel like Philly is struggling because of health. I feel like New York is struggling because of chemistry. And I really still think that is a valid point there. And Eli looks just shell-shocked. There's no other way to describe it. He looks shell-shocked. He's looking at the rush when it comes to him and not feeling the rush and keeping his eyes downfield. So, and the other piece of it is, if you draft Darnold, but you don't have Saquon Barkley, I still think they're in the same predicament because Wayne Gallman looks like he's on his way out the league. I mean, he's just not an NFL running back. So the plays with Saquon is make keep them in games. You know, you take that away if you take Darnold. And, I mean, maybe he does something because he has a good wide receiving core, but that run game, that offensive line, and that defense, bro, is tough times for the Giants.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my little two cents of that, just to kind of piggyback on that. I would definitely say that. So I think, Rob, the Giants, they probably were like, you know, hey, let's give Eli one more last shot to kind of prove he's, you know, he wasn't the same, if you wanted to kind of like let him go out. Because I think last year wasn't fair how they kind of got rid of him, you know, kind of bitched him, you know, kind of let him go out and kind of, okay, this is it, man. But we clearly know that he is definitely not the same quarterback as you mentioned, man. And so, you know, going into the offseason, you know, they'll be definitely heavily scouting quarterbacks, and we'll see. They may be up there with the Dolphins too, man. So keep an eye on that as well, man. Really quickly, since we're kind of talking about the Giants, does Odell Beckham's antics distract from Eli's terrible play, you think, Rob, or just kind of like just kind of secondary?
Well, I think early on his antics was covering up in Eli, but I think after this past week, I don't think he can cover up Eli's play any longer. JQ mentioned it. He looks like a deer in headlights out there. It just looked like Eli's had a great career. I'm sure he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But I think it's time for him to retire after this season. I don't even think it makes sense for him to try to go play for another team. He might as well go ahead and hang up the cleats and call it quits. I think the game has just passed him by at this point. So I don't think Odell's antics is covering up Eli's poor play any longer. I think it did, like I said, for the first couple of weeks. But if you recall, prior to the season, I thought the Giants were making a mistake giving Odell Beckham that kind of money. And I still agree with that. I know he's an LSU kid, but I think they made a mistake by giving him that kind of money, and I said it in the preseason, and I'm going to say it again. They made a mistake.
All right.
You know, yes and no. I mean, I think you make that bet with him. You knew that going into him. You would never get fair dollar on a trade for somebody with his talent, even though he has those off-the-field antics. It really is, for me, is just that Eli has hit the wall, and they went all in on Eli for one more year, because I think this was last year that deal of that extension he signed. They didn't want to eat any damn money. It was really a piece of it. You can always follow the money when you want to figure out why somebody's still there or not there. And it would cost them a lot of money and dead money on the salary cap to cut him and try to move forward with a younger quarterback. But they're just a dumpster fire. There's nothing else really to say about it. That's just what they are. A lot of it, when you don't have good quarterback play, it trickles down. Like I said, you leave the defense on the field too long, they get exposed. You don't have an offensive line. Saquon is doing everything he can. I mean, he has just been phenomenal for them. I don't think so. I'm with you, Rob. I think everybody is looking at it now like, okay, this is beyond OBJ. And I think a lot of people, if you want to be honest, they weren't necessarily mad with OBJ with his message. They were mad that he let it go to the media. That's the issue. If he'd have kept it in-house and tried to have that conversation and it got leaked by somebody else, then I think he was like, okay, I get it. He was trying to take control and be a leader in the locker room because, yeah, you know, Eli's just been that bad. But once you give the interview sitting next to Lil Wayne, and then you spread the gospel for everybody to hear, that's where he takes the brunt of the criticism. So, you know, I don't think it's the message. Just a lot of times it's the way you deliver it.
Fair enough. All right.
Yep,
good call
point.
On that, too. So, like you said, we're keeping an eye on the Giants. Like I said, shout out to Jeff, man. I know one of my coworkers, he's a Giants fan, kind of a suffering Giants fan, too, man. So, again, bro, it's gonna be a long season. He had such high hopes, man. He was excited about Saquon, but he just, man, craziness. Right,
they should still be excited about Saquon. I mean, some of the runs he had in that game was electric.
They were, but it's all about the team, man, you know. Yeah, but it's just, he's just, you know, down. But, yeah,
they
go ahead, Rob, let me cut you off. That's crazy. Yeah.
Multiple people.
I know.
They'll be all right.
Yeah, they'll be all right. Oh, gentlemen, let's talk about the next game, Rob. Let's talk about the Jaguars or the Cowboys. Man,
I didn't see this coming at all.
I was going to say that because, again, 40-7, holy Nikes, what the French toast, man. Go ahead, Rob.
I did not see this one coming at all. I thought Jacksonville was going to be able to go in the Big D and win. This is definitely the best offensive output from the Cowboys by far. We just talked about on the show last week that they had the worst offense in the league. But now you got to be wondering, Jacksonville is probably had the worst offensive league along with Buffalo Bills. They couldn't generate any offense. Dak Prescott actually looked good throwing the football today. Not great, but good. 17 out of 27, 183 yards passing, 2 touchdowns. He also had a career-high 82 yards rushing in the game as well. Cole Beasley been saying the whole year he's been open, and I guess he's right. He had 9 catches, 101 yards, 2 touchdowns. Zeke Elliott had a good game, 24 carries, 106 yards, a touchdown. Blake Bortles looked pitiful. And the whole Jacksonville Jaguars offense looked pitiful. It was, I just didn't see this one coming. And the Cowboys was very impressive. They're now 3-3. They're right there tied with the Eagles. Redskins back in first place at 3-2. So here we go. Now you got a dogfight in the NFC East.
Yeah, wow.
I still think the Eagles in the end will come out and win that division, though.
Yeah, it's a couple things about that. That Jacksonville defense, I was surprised. If you look at what Dallas did, they used really a lot of that Mississippi State kind of that RPO piece with Dak and Zeke, you know, to generate confusion. And that really surprised me that Jacksonville, as good as they are, would allow something so not simplistic, but it's more of a college kind of style offense to flummox them like that, and it did. You know, you talked about his passing, but it was the way he was able to keep the chains moving with his legs and make big plays running with his legs. It really surprised me that Jacksonville was so susceptible to that today over and over and over and over again. And if you look at that Jacksonville offense, I don't know how much leverage Fournette thought he had before or didn't have, but they are struggling on offense, and they need that big battering ram to go in there and settle things down. Yeldon, to me, is a third down, change of pace kind of back. He's not the dynamic, you know, bruiser that Fournette is, and you can tell that offense is just missing that. And they look like a shell of themselves. And I think we talked about with the Giants, it just looks like they're keeping that Jacksonville defense on the field a lot, and they're getting beat up. But I definitely didn't see Dallas, you know, running that, you know, the RPO in the zone to that level against that Jacksonville defense with that kind of success. I was really shocked at that.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. And you know, both of you guys hit it right on the head too. You didn't expect them to, like, you know, we were just pretty much clowning the Cowboys had problems, they couldn't score. And you're thinking going to Jacksonville, that's a top defense. But again, it's the NFL, right, Rob?
Yeah.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah. Yep. And the Patriots win 43-40.
Wow.
Chiefs lose their first game.
Yeah. But it wasn't me.
Wow.
He's got a position. Patrick Mahomes played good, man. Good for him, man. He represented, man. He should not feel ashamed by any means, man. Are the Eagles back, Rob?
I think they're on their way back, for sure. I mean, obviously, I think it was a combination of two things in that game the other night. It was a combination of them making their way back and also going against a horrible Giants team on Thursday night. So it's a combination of both. But you can start to see that Carson Wentz is slowly but surely starting to look like he looked last year prior to that injury. I thought he moved around in the pocket extremely well in that game. He made some unbelievable throws in that game as well. They had a big play offense. You can slowly see that team coming back. And even defensively, they made a lot of big plays other than stopping Saquon Barkley. But, hey, I mean, who's stopping Saquon Barkley? But other than that, they put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Yeah, but like I said, it's still the Giants. Yeah, Eli Manning is a little slow-footed in the pocket. But I think it was a combination of both of those things between the Eagles making their way back, and then, of course, going against the Giants as well.
Yeah, and, I mean, the thing about it is that that's just where the NFC East is. Well, I take that back. That's what we thought the NFC East was before Dallas went and just shellacked Jacksonville today. But I said it before that I thought that, you know, he missed those first couple of games, so he didn't have those games to get himself right and play himself in there, so it was going to take a little longer for him to get some of the rust knocked off. I think you're starting to see that. But the thing that hurt him, I believe Jason Peters ruptured his bicep, which is a really big blow to that offensive line. Even though he's about 43 years old, he's still a big old mountain of a man that was still playing pretty decent, you know, football out there for him. So I'm interested to see what that does for him. So I'm a pump the brakes. If he had been healthy coming out of that game, I would say they were back. Because I feel like they just needed a little time to get healthy, especially, you know, if you don't have the quarterback, you don't have anything. He's putting everybody back in their proper places. I think, you know, Clement and Smallwood can make up for Jaya being gone. But Jason Pages being hurt is tough. So I think they did what they had to do. They beat a real and Giants team like they were supposed to do. And you see how they do moving forward. That Redskins team was not necessarily playing bad ball. And then you see Dallas with the glimpses they showed us today. So we'll see. I'm not quite sure yet.
Good call. Nothing brings me more excitement than to have Rob talk about the Atlanta Falcons, man. Let's do the Falcons-Buccaneers recap, Rob.
Yeah, well, congratulations to your Falcons today. The Falcons, Matt Ryan, a big day, 3 touchdown passes, 31 out of 41, 354 yards. Julio Jones has been having a lot of big games catching, but still doesn't have a touchdown this year. 10 catches, 143 yards on an offense. Jameis Winston also had 395 yards, 4 TDs, 2 INTs. That really hurt them. The Bucs almost had an incredible play at the end of the game with the laterals to come back and win the game, but fell short in the end. Much-needed win for Atlanta. And once again, we talked about this on the show previously. You have to outscore Atlanta to beat them because offensively they're still going to be extremely tough. They have injuries on defense. You're going to have to put up 37 or more points in a lot of games to beat this Atlanta team because they are still going to be tough and they're still scary offensively. But they get the win, move to 2-4, drops Tampa Bay to 2-3.
Yeah, you hit it on the head with those. I mean, they almost should be the game of the week just because you know you're going to get a show when you put Atlanta on. You know, outside of that Pittsburgh game, they're going to have an absolute show. You talk about with the Saints, you talk about with the Bengals, you talk about today with the Bucks, and with the Panthers, I believe earlier than too. So, yeah, that's a much needed win for Atlanta to stop some of the bleeding. James still looks like he's got some rust, and he forced a couple throws in there, especially those INTs in the end zone. But you got to give credit to Atlanta for holding on. It could have been crazy. That would have been a really tough way to lose that game. Deshaun Jackson had got in the end zone on those idols at the end. You just can't explain that away. But it didn't happen. Atlanta wins. They'll take that victory right now, given what's happened, any way they can get it. So, shout out to Atlanta for finding a way to hold on and win the game.
And that's what you have to do in the NFL. A lot of these games are going to be close. You have to be able to find a way to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel you, J.K., because it's too close, man. Even at the end, I'm like, man, they messed around. I was like, man, I hate it, man. I hate these roller coaster, man. You know, so just shootouts, man. It's just terrible. All right, so we got about 12 minutes
you
here.
Half of your luck.
Yeah, I know. J.Q., are the Panthers still the contender in the NFC?
I don't know. I we talked about it before that defense, I think, is starting to get a little age on them. And they just really let Alex Smith come out today and just punch him in the mouth early. And they tried to rally in that game, but they allowed that to happen. And then the rookie, DJ Moore, with 2 cost fumbles. I'm glad they stuck with him because he got a big catch and they're trying to come back in the fourth quarter. But, you know, that NFC is so crazy. You see Carolina look really good one week and the next week you don't. I still put them in the pretender category for now. They always have a chance because they've got Cam. They've got some weapons on offense, but that defense scares me a little bit as well. They just have gotten a little bit older. I think there's one of those teams like we talked about with Seattle where they're going to find themselves in the games every week, but they're not going to win all of them. I can see them being 8-8 in that same thing. It's going to be really crazy in the NFC the way this is shaping out for those wild card positions because, you know, you look at Dallas and you're like, okay, we can't necessarily put the shovel on them. Nor the Redskins as well, and Carolina just lost to those Redskins, but you can see Carolina come back and beat somebody next week and then put themselves right back in the conversation. So, you know, they're still a pretender for me as well. I wouldn't call them back still a viable option, so to speak, right now. But, you know, we'll see. They still got half a season left.
Yeah, and JQ, you actually stole a little bit of my thunder because I was going to say the exact same thing. I put them in the same category with Seattle. It could be right there in that mix somewhere between 5-8 in the NFC. Could possibly be a wild card team or just also ran just missing the playoffs here, but not a contender to get to the Super Bowl by any stretch of the imagination. Cam Newton Christian McCaffrey. They do have some big playability on the offensive side of the football, but they're still not a team that you're going to expect to score 30-some points on a week, on a weekly basis. And then the NFC, at the top of the NFC right now, the Saints and the Rams seem like they're going to be in the ballpark to score 30-some points or more every week, and they won't be able to be in that kind of contention on a regular basis. And their defense, is particularly on the back end, is not up to par. And even on the front seven, they're starting to show a little bit of age as well. And you look at some of the wins that they have. I mean, they barely beat the Giants. They had to kick a 63-yard field goal at the end last week to beat the Giants at home. And we saw how atrocious the Giants were on Thursday nights. And I know some teams match up differently against certain teams, but even though they're 3-2, I don't think it's a very impressive 3-2 in my opinion.
Mm-mm. I agree. You there, Andre?
Dang it, I muted myself. I apologize. I'm over talking here. I'm over here muting myself here. All right, guys, I got about 8 minutes.
Yeah,
9 minutes
left in
the show.
Sleep, ladies and gentlemen.
No. Literally, I put myself on mute because I was like, I was in the background here. Really quickly, let's talk about this. Good call on that, and we're gonna keep moving here with some predictions here. And let's do the Titans at the Chargers. Go Chargers, JQ. What you got on this one?
Hey, man, I don't know if y'all watched any of that Baltimore-Tennessee game, but Tennessee was awful today at home against Baltimore. Baltimore, I believe, had 11 sacks in that game.
Yeah,
Mariota,
sacks,
he just
yeah.
does – he can't – he still doesn't have feeling in his hand to throw the ball, which would be really concerning to me that we're a couple weeks away from that injury now and he's still not fully back. I said it before, they're going to struggle to score points. Nothing I saw today is going to change that. If you look at the Chargers, I think what the only losses are to the Rams and the Chiefs. So that Chargers team is still a pretty good team. I'm gonna go with LA. I was on San Diego, but I'm gonna go with LA. They just have too much firepower on offense, and they're playing a really good brand of defense right now. They went into Cleveland against everybody's favorite upstart this year and really cooled them off and cooled Baker Mayfield off. I can't see that changing at all when they play Tennessee.
Hey, yes, I totally agree. I don't think this game is gonna be close. The Chargers, the Chiefs. The Chargers are right up there with the Chiefs and the Patriots for being the best teams in the AFC. I mean, Pittsburgh might make their way back in it. Look like they slowly but surely are. And obviously you might have to include the Ravens in that mix too. But I like this Chargers team. Melvin Gordon is off to an incredible start, both running and receiving so far this year. He's been one of the better players in the NFL so far this season. I like this Chargers team, and I like them big in this football game. I'm going 28-10 Chargers at home.
Let's just
hope that we don't get surprised like the Jacksonville Cowboys game, man. So we'll see how that plays out. Everything does point to the Chargers, as we both said too. But you know, like I said, it is the NFL. So hopefully, either the Titans are going to get mad and come out and just be swinging, or again, we'll see. As always. Hey, gentlemen, next game here. This is interesting. We have the Patriots. They just literally knocked off the Chiefs here. Now, what about them going to Chicago at the Bears, Rob?
I think the Patriots are starting to hit their stride here a little bit, and I like them to go on the road and beat the Bears here in this game. I think it's going to be extremely close. I'm going to go 31-28, another close game, but the Patriots find a way to win on the road. They're starting to get their groove here a little bit. The Bears' offense is not as good as the Chiefs, but I still think they can put up 20-something points on the Patriots, but I like the Patriots to win in the end by a field goal.
Yeah, he said they're back in stride again like Frankie Beverly and Mays. Yeah, I agree with that as well. And I think I think it's so close. Yeah, I'm old. I'm sorry. But what we saw Belichick do in the end of this game to Pat Mahomes, I think he's going to do that also to Trubisky and kind of confuse him a little bit. You know, Nagy's got a really good, thing going with his offense there with, with Cohen and Trey Burton as well. I just don't see them doing that. Like you said, I think they're finding their groove and they're probably licking their chops at another young quarterback in a way they can confuse him because Trubisky still makes some really bad decisions if you watch some of these games. His defense outside of today have been bailing him out. I think the Patriots win by 14-plus in that game, to be honest. I think Trubisky makes too many mistakes.
Nice. All right, let's keep moving here. Next game here, let's talk about this. Rob, your Saints, bro, at the Ravens. This is not going to be a cupcake, man. So what do you think about this? And We hope JQ does some magic for you. Go ahead.
Well, no doubt about it. The Saints are going to have to bring a hard hat in this game. They're going to have to play with a certain kind of physicality to go on the road and compete with the Ravens team that's always going to play with a physical brand of football here. But the thing that the Saints have going for them that we saw last year was that they were able to go on the road in cold weather cities because they have a running game that travels now. And plus, the way the NFL is working right now, in order to beat a team with a high-powered offense, you have to have one of your own, and the Ravens do not have that. But I think the game will still be close because Baltimore is at home. I'm going to say they contain it, slow down the Saints' offense, but I think the Saints will win 27-21 on the road in Baltimore.
That's a surprise.
In no way. I might surprise you, too. I agree with that assessment. I don't think Baltimore's going to be able to score enough points. They're going to not. It's not going to be a 40-point game for Drew Brees in that offense. But if they can get to 24 or 27 points, they got a legitimate shot to go into BB&T Bank, Stadium there in Baltimore and win that game. When I watch the Ravens, when they have a mediocre kind of quarterback who doesn't have, an outstanding elite wide receiver, they can do the things they did today against Mariota. But if you look at when the Bengals were able to beat them, Andy Dalton is not nothing necessarily to write home about, but they have A.J. Green, and he was big in that game. The Saints have Michael Thomas, who I think is going to really be big in that game. And if he doesn't necessarily do it himself, him being the decoy with that running game, I think they'd be able to do just enough. And Joe Flacco shows us that, yeah, he's still Joe Flacco. The Saints win.
Nice. Good job. All right. And we said the best for last. We got 3 minutes and 40-something seconds. JQ, your Bengals at the Chiefs Sunday night. What say you, boss?
I think you already know what I'm going to say. I mean, come on. They're not going into Arrowhead. I think the Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis are like 1-8,000 in primetime games in their tenure. So there's nothing in me. I'm at the point with them. Until I see it, I want them to win. I'm a fan. Everybody knows that's my team. But until I see them do it consistently on the big stage against that offense right there that just went into New England and put freaking 40 points on them, and then they lost and they're going to be pissed off, and then you know what they're going to say? Own the Cincinnati. Just like Belichick said that year, and then they whooped us in New England. We got to go do the same thing at Arrowhead on Sunday night. Come on, man. I would love for the Bengals to shock the world, but that's just not going to happen.
Rob, you got 45 seconds into the OT portion. Go ahead. You can be quick.
I agree with JQ on his assessment. I've said this before a few shows ago. I had the privilege to go to a game in Kansas City. That is a tough place to go and win a football game when the Chiefs are good. That's going to be extremely tough. I got to go with the Chiefs at home in this game. I think it's going to be very high scoring because the Chiefs give up a lot of points too. I'm going to go 40-31 Chiefs at home.
Nice.
And ladies and gentlemen, we'll go right into wrapping up our live portion of the show here tonight. We thank you all for tuning in once again. Make sure you hit us up on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know if you like the show. Give us some feedback if you agree with us, do not agree with us. Make sure you get ready to call us on next week. Next week we're going to be on the air on Tuesday night, not Sunday night. We're going to be on the air Tuesday night, 23rd. We're going to give JQ the opportunity to focus on his Bengals. If he's anything like me, I'm very intense when my teams are playing and I can't keep still. So we're going to give him the opportunity to focus on him tuning into his Bengals game. So once again, we'll be on the air live Tuesday night, October the 23rd, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central. And for our people on the West Coast, that's going to be 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You don't want to miss us on Tuesday the 23rd. We're getting ready to go into our OT portion of the show. We can't give you this portion of the show live. We'll click on the same link on tomorrow. You'll get to hear the rest of the show. We still have baseball. We still have college football. And we still have our NBA preview to cover on our OT portion. So we still got a lot to cover, people. You don't want to miss tuning in on tomorrow, the same link, to get our OT portion. We're making football great again, people. Good night.
Absolutely. I walk like a paid tiger when I watch them play, and I'm going to be walking like a crazy person again. My family just leaves me alone. They all go to separate rooms when the Bengals on TV because I'm a crazy person. Thank you all for listening to us tonight. Right, stay tuned to download the show tomorrow to get this college football talk and this baseball talk. We appreciate your love and support as always. Good night.
making football great again is what we do. Again, we appreciate everyone tuning in, as Rob said, too. So we got to gonna jump into the OT portion here. We got to talk about some baseball, guys. Let's kick this off here. We got a couple things to talk about. Brewers, Dodgers, all the fun stuff here. So we're going to recap. Game number two. We're going to talk about game number three, too. So let's do a quick recap, Rob, as far as what's happening with the Brewers and the Dodgers. I don't know why I did that, but that's okay. Wake us up when you're awake. Right. You're good. He was like, whoa.
We just want to wake everybody up, people. We want to wake you all up.
Making sure we're awake for the OT portion. It was like, what? All right, it's all good.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this series so far is that the Dodgers are having their most success on this vaunted bullpen for the Brewers in this series so far. That's how they were able to come back and win game two in this game here as well. So it's going to be extremely interesting here going forward. I mean, last time these teams met in Los Angeles, the Dodgers won 21-5 over the Brewers, and actually Chaisson, who's going to be the game three pitcher, he was a starter on that night as well. So it's going to be extremely interesting here. Like I said, surprisingly, the Dodgers have had success against this vaunted Brewers bullpen. Here so far in these first couple of games. The Dodgers are going with Walker Buehler on the starting. He's starting game three on tomorrow.
Buehler?
He's been Buehler, yeah. He's been very strong here in the last couple of months of the season. So we'll see. He's been, for the season, he's 8-5 with a 2.62 ERA. And like I said, he's been an ace, pretty much a strong ace here in the last 2 months of the season, except for the second inning of game three against the Braves. But he's looked really strong, like I said, prior to that. And so we'll see. I like the Dodgers tomorrow.
Mm.
I still think they seem to beat the series.
Yeah, he's really been that rookie has really been outstanding. I played fantasy baseball this year, and I've had him for times on my team. He's really been outstanding for that Dodgers lineup. Him and Ross Stripling, when Rich Hill and Ryu got hurt, really stepped into that rotation and helped stabilize it. So that's not going to be any pushover. And I don't trust Chasing, and I never trust any – throughout the season. He's too high and low for me from Milwaukee. But the thing about this series, if I can step back to game one, is that I quibble a little bit with Council's manager because he had Gio going, and Gio had only given up one hit, which happened to be the home run to Machado. And he took him out after two innings. And then he had Hader, and he had Woodruff come in who hit the home run, only throw two innings. And he had Hader throw three innings. So he burnt both of those guys up in game one, and you saw them unable to use them in game two. And they were able to tap into that Milwaukee bullpen. Those two guys are the guys out that bullpen are the ones that really cause stress for the other team. So when you burn them up like that, you basically, to win game one, you gave up game two. So it's going to be interesting for me to see what those two guys have available in game three. If Chesson can go three and a third innings and you only give up one or two runs, and then those two guys can come in and give you four to five innings to get you to the closer, so to speak, or, you know, four to six innings, somewhere in that range. Can they shorten the game that way again in game three like they did in game one? I've got concerns about that because he kind of cast his lot with those two guys the way he used them in game one. So the chess match that they have between Council and Roberts is going to be really interesting to see that lefty-righty matchup in terms of how the Dodgers stack that lineup against that Milwaukee pitching staff. But I agree with you. Anybody outside of Woodruff and Hader has been getting really lit up by that Dodgers lineup, which is crazy potent. They take the edge of the long ball, and the Dodgers are all about it. So I'm actually really interested to see how that game three unfolds.
Yeah, and Jeffrey said he got lucky.
Yeah, he got sucked. He got sucked twice. In game one, he just had a big enough lead to survive it, but in game two, he didn't. So, you know,
nice.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're having a good time with that, too. So good job on the recap here. And let's talk about some college football here. We're going to switch gears here. And does Notre Dame have a chance? Are you saying there's a chance to at the playoffs here? So go ahead, Rob.
Well, they absolutely have a chance. I mean, you look at the schedule. I mean, we have at Navy. I expect Notre Dame to win that. At home against Northwestern. Northwestern has been really competitive, but I think Notre Dame should win that. They're at home against Florida State. The way Florida State is playing, I expect Notre Dame to win that. Then at home against Syracuse. Syracuse has been competitive too, but I would expect Notre Dame to win. The one game you got to watch, because USC typically gets better as the season gets along. You got to catch USC early under Clay Helton. Notre Dame has to go to USC on the road. the last game of the season. That's the game to watch. That's the one that has the potential for an upset for USC. I mean, they had a nice win over Colorado this past weekend. It's kind of put them back in the thick of things to win in the Pac-12 South. That's the game you got to watch. But if Notre Dame could go undefeated, then you absolutely got to consider them to make the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And the one thing that you talk about with their AC, them being independent but still having the ACC tie-in, is that they don't have to play Clemson. So when you talk about the ACC being down really this year and Clemson being that, you know, shining beacon on the hill, they don't have to play those boys. And then you watch what happened this week. You had four top 10 teams lose. So if Notre Dame can just, you know, even if they win ugly, if they can just keep putting W's on the board and let other teams have to, you know, play some of the harder teams within their own conferences and knock each other kind of off, they're going to really be sitting pretty there at the end of it. So, you know, if they take care of business, I fully expect Notre Dame to be able to be in that conversation for sure. That switch the book at quarterback has really opened that offense up, like we talked about before. He struggled a little bit against Pitt, but Pitt is a traditional rival for them, and sometimes in those rivalry games, it you know, stuff goes haywire a little bit. And I think everybody kind of sleptwalked during this week, if we can talk about an overall theme from this past college football weekend. It was a lot of higher-ranked teams that either lost or barely won, sleepwalking through games they thought like they should have ran another team over. So I'm going to chalk that up for that for them with Pitt this week. But I really think they have a really strong chance. I'm not a Notre Dame fan, but the way the schedule is lined up, the way that Roger talked about, and given the way everybody else is falling by the wayside, got a really legitimate shot at getting into the playoffs for sure.
Yeah. And they've had some pretty nice wins. I mean, they beat Michigan, who is getting better and better as the season goes along. That if Michigan keep playing like the way they are, that's going to be a nice win for Notre Dame. Obviously, they won at home against Stanford, and they went on the road against Virginia Tech. So they have to hope that those three teams have some form of success to make those victories continue to stand out. And if USC get on a roll and they can beat USC, that will also look like a nice victory for Notre Dame too.
And USC being Colorado also helps that they are able to beat USC at the end. So yeah, totally. That Michigan win though is the one I think is going to be the one they're going to be able to point to when you start comparing resumes.
Good job. All right. Does the college football playoff need some fixing, JQ?
I'm not quite sure where Rob was going with that one. So I would you know, defer to him on that one. I don't necessarily think so. I think to me, well, I'll take that back. I'll say expound upon it. To me, I don't think it does. I think you still keep the validity of the season intact because you got a Power Five conference. But in any given year, to me, this is my own opinion, one of those conferences always generally falls by the wayside. We're like, you know what, that one has a down year. We're going to probably, if we can get one representative from the other four, then we have a good cross-section of the best teams in college football. So for me, I don't really think so. I know I'm in the minority. I know that people want to go to six or eight games, but I like having that pressure cooker of only having four teams to make, you know, every single game count. And not be like, okay, well, we lost this one. Well, we're down to six or eight, so well, one or two lost team can get in. And it may get more, you know, I guess with the wild card kind of thing you have in baseball, you get more excitement when you have more teams available for the postseason. I like having that four and keeping the other bowls in place where they are now. I just don't like extending the season anymore. I don't like devaluing the regular season anymore. But I know I'm in the minority, and I own that, but that's just me.
Nice. All
yeah,
right, man, keep going.
And I slightly disagree there. I actually would like to see a 6-18 format. And the reason why I say that is we look at the last couple of years here, we've had two teams from the same conference go to the playoffs for 2 years in a row. And I just think that we have to put some value into the conference championship. I would like to see the five conference champions from the Power Five all be in the playoffs. And you look at last year's playoff, you had a team with Ohio State with a statement victory in the Big 12 championship, but it didn't get an opportunity to compete in the playoffs. They gave their last spot to Alabama because they had one loss. But if you're going to put two teams from the same conference, I think it's only fair that we give the conference champions an opportunity to compete in the playoffs. So I would like to see a format where we have the five power conference champions plus one wild card, or the five power champions and three wild cards, would have been two wild cards and the best from the team from the smaller conferences or something like that. I would like to see something like that. I think we have to put more value into the conference championship.
Yeah, but the thing about that is I don't feel like every conference championship is created equal going from year to year. So to guarantee a conference automatic slot, I think devalues some of the regular season because you don't necessarily have that pressure cooker to have to win every game when you know your conference is going to get an automatic bid. That's just me personally, and I think the other conferences have to set their game up. You have to schedule more, you know, robust, harder out-of-conference games early in the year, like, you know, teams are starting to do. And you got to take care of business. I mean, I think the SEC is just in a spiral of power right now to where they're just controlling that argument right now. But it's all cyclical. I don't think 5 years from now it's going to be the same thing. But we look at it, if we want to be honest, sometimes you look at the Pac-12 and sometimes the Big 12, and I don't think they're really worthy of having that automatic bid, you know, every year in and year out. So that's why I disagree with that piece of it. And I don't want to get these dudes hurt also. And by the time you get to the championship game, those guys have had to play 3 rounds of playoffs as opposed to the, you know, the semis and then the finals. And then you don't get the best product because such and such got hurt from the best team playing that second game. They wouldn't have had to play if you didn't extend the playoffs. So for me, I like it the way it is. It keeps the pressure on, and that's what we love about college football. Yeah. Every Saturday matters.
Yeah, but I think the pressure will still be on because you still have to have a great regular season to win your conference. In order for you to even get to your conference championship game, you still have to have a great regular season in order to get there. But we have 2 years in a row where we've had a questionable decision on who made the playoffs. So Ohio State could have been very deserving to be in there last year. And the year before that, Penn State could have been very deserving to be in there the year before. So we've had some questionable decisions. You know, I think these teams are deserving to be in the playoffs. And like I said, I still think it puts you on the platform to where you have to succeed in the regular season in order to even get to your conference championship game and win it.
Well, look at the Pac-12. Nice. That Pac-12 South is a dumpster fire. And then you mess around and have one of those 50 losses, teams get to there, and then something fluky happens in the championship game, and they're in. And it's like, man, that team didn't deserve to be here, but you guaranteed that conference a seat at the table. That's why I don't like that guarantee for a conference piece of it, because you have those years where that happens. And I'm sorry, Pac-12, but I'm looking at you, that a lot of times, you know, you guys
Pac-12 has not been good the last couple of years. I would agree with you on that. But there are going to be times when the Pac-12 have an undefeated USC team or one-loss USC team or one-loss Washington team that's deserving. And I will agree, like I said, they haven't been good the last couple of years. But a few years back, Washington had one loss and was in the playoffs. And so they're going to have opportunities to where they do belong in the playoffs, too.
I think it'll work. I think it'll work itself out. I'll leave it at that. I think it'll work itself out. They have a good year, and there's no guarantee they'll still get in, especially if you're a USC. So,
all right.
That's me. You thought.
No, you're good. Doing good. We're going to recap a couple of these games, man. So really quickly, and give a shout out to JQ. I think JQ was the only one that picked LSU overcoming Georgia. Man, wow. Let's talk about that too.
I know. Hey, the second time this year, crazy. I picked against LSU, and JQ picked them, and they won. But I'll take it.
Joe Burrow, baby.
Let's do this. And like I said, some of these quick recaps, guys. If you guys can just chime in on those as well, and we'll get the show moving here. And cause I know we got a busy morning tomorrow too, so we got this party started here. So let's talk about you know, USC beating Colorado, Michigan just totally throwing out Wisconsin. That's crazy. Rob mentioned it earlier. Ohio State, another upset on West Virginia. And then we're going to do Michigan State upsetting Penn State here. So this is crazy here, if you will, too. So, Rob, I'll let you kind of take the floor, and then we'll pass on to JQ from that perspective.
Well, we'll start with USC here first. Got out to a rocky start this year. They're up to 4-2 now, 3-1 in the Pac-12. So this puts them right back in the thick of things for that Pac-12 South Championship to make it to the Pac-12 Championship game. Clay Helton is 19-0 at home at the Coliseum, 15-1 against the Pac-12 South. So he continues that. The talent, there's a big talent disparity still between USC and Colorado. So there's no, obviously USC is playing with a freshman quarterback who's supposed to be a senior in high school this year, but you can still see that they're getting better every week. And I thought, actually, even though Colorado scored 20 points in this game, I was very impressed with USC's defense. Offensively, they still made a lot of mistakes in this game and still scored 31 points. But USC's defense, you're starting to see the talent starting to come around. and shine defensively. So I still expect this team to get better every week. I mean, I don't know how far they're going to go this year. They're still very young, but they do have the talent and they have the personnel. So I think this team will continue to get better as the year goes along. We talked about Michigan. I mean, just dominated. 320 yards rushing. They put the hands into the running game and offensive line here and just smash mouth team in Wisconsin. They beat them at their own game. They just had more physicality. I mean, they had 320 yards rushing, 237 yards in the second half. I mean, so they just dominated them. They just came out and said, we're going to run the ball down your throat, and that was all she wrote. They just totally dominated Wisconsin in this game.
Yeah, and the thing about it for the other ones, I mean, you're right. USC is young, and we talk about it. They just needed time to mature. They got a really young team. It's hard for them to hit the ground running. But USC has so much more talent than Colorado could ever dream to have in this day and age. These are not, you know, Cordell Stewart is not walking through that door. Like, if that's not happening for Colorado.
I thought about that, too. Eric
Bieniemy.
Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, so I'm not overly surprised about that. They're young and need a little bit more time to mature. And then, yeah. Hornibrook is awful for Wisconsin. We just need to say that. I don't know why Jonathan Taylor would go to Wisconsin. That dude is electric. If you people don't know about Wisconsin's running back, that dude is the real deal. But he's been saddled with Hornibrook, and they can't throw the ball. And if he had anybody that could throw the ball to balance off of his running ability, Wisconsin would be a so much of a harder out. But Hornibrook is holding that team back, and Michigan putting those hands to Wisconsin in that game, that was really bad. Penn State, James Franklin. He just can't close, man. He cannot close. He can't close at all. In close games, he just has the inability to find a way to lose games he should win. And last but not least, I told y'all in August, I didn't trust anything about West Virginia football and that Will Grier, when the lights were on, when he's supposed to win a game, he will find a way to lose one of those games. And lo and behold, they go and lose to Iowa State. That's why I could not get aboard the Will Grier for Heisman. I couldn't get aboard West Virginia being, you know, a dark horse and crashing the party. And they still might be able to prove me wrong, but it's this kind of game from West Virginia is why I don't trust West Virginia football.
And Iowa State held West Virginia to 152 yards total offense. That is unbelievable. I wouldn't have even expected the Alabama defense to hold them to 152 yards total offense. Do I expect the Alabama team to beat West Virginia? Absolutely. But to hold them to 152 yards total offense, where they've been racking up points and yardage this year, that was unbelievable by Iowa State.
Yeah, I tell you what, Purdue riding Illinois. Purdue may be ranked next week, and I'm super concerned about that game for Ohio State because it's another game now on the road at Purdue at night. And that Ohio State team, I watched every single snap of that game against Minnesota, and they got lucky to win that game. That score does not really define how bad they played against Minnesota. I don't know if they were looking ahead. I know they were beat up. But if they go into Purdue and play like that, they're going to lose. We're going to talk about them next week. He's going to be consoling me about how Ohio State had another game they shouldn't have lost on the road, but they did. Purdue is actually playing really good ball right now. So that concerns me. And then LSU, just woo. I expected them to beat Georgia, but woo.
Yeah.
I didn't expect them to do Georgia like that. That was, I told you, playing down there in Death Valley, that was a tour de force by that LSU team. Georgia's got some real questions now with the way Jake Fromm played, and they got to get the ability to get Justin Fields on the field and actually let him throw the ball because teams know when he comes in, it's a pure running attack. When you play a good defense or a good team like LSU, that's not going to work against them like it works against Missouri and those other teams. So Georgia's got some things they got to figure out. But my word, I didn't expect LSU to lay the wood to them like that. That was the most impressive victory of the weekend because you got the number two team coming to your town and you just beat them down.
Get the brakes off
Man. And getting back to that, I'll comment on the LSU game in Charlotte. I'll get back to the Purdue game here a little bit. I mean, Purdue offensively is just, they're racking up yardage both on the ground and throwing the football. So this is a very underrated team, as JQ just mentioned. 611 yards total offense on that Lovie Smith defense. David Blow, 377 yards passing, 25 out of 36, three touchdowns. DJ Knox on the ground, 17 carries, 150 yards. They getting it done, both throwing the football and running the football quietly there in the Big Ten. So this is definitely a team that I'm not sure if they made it in the rankings or not, But they should probably be there shortly here. They just wild. Poor Lovie Smith. I don't know if he's going to be able to turn that Illinois team around anytime soon. They got walloped in this game at home against Purdue. JQ talked about the LSU game. I didn't even see that coming, even as an LSU fan, as much as I wanted to. But I tell you what, I certainly hecked enjoyed it. And offensively was the bright spot even for LSU in this game. I mean, they kind of did a lot of no huddle in this game. They were able to run the ball down Georgia's throat in this game. And even throwing the ball down the field. I know Joe Burrow was only 15 out of 30, but we made a lot of big plays in the passing game down the field. LSU's got a loaded group of wide receivers. They all are young. Most of them are freshmen and sophomores. But they're making big plays in the passing game down the field. And even though this is an unheralded running back group for LSU, the running back by committee, the offensive line is really coming around. The one downside to this LSU team is we don't really have an elite pass rusher, and that's mainly because Kalavon Chaisson got hurt in the Miami game out for the season. He was the best pass rusher on the team. But LSU's got three elite defenders that are going to be the first or second round draft pick, Devin White, linebacker, obviously Greedy Williams at the cornerback position, and then Grant Delpit is the next great safety. Out of LSU. This kid is unreal. He's Jamal Adams, Tyrann Mathieu type safety, can do it all. So we do have, but we're just missing that elite pass rusher on this team.
Well, ain't nobody going to give you no credit for talking about West Virginia being a fraud. That's how we're going to live? Okay.
No. I tell you another thing about that LSU-Georgia game. When Georgia went for the fake field goal, they tried to pull out Les Miles' famous fake field goal play in Baton Rouge.
That's hilarious.
Ate it up, and it seemed like the momentum of that game was all LSU for the rest of the game. And to be honest with you, I think Georgia went away from the running game a little too soon in that game, too. They were having some success running the ball a little bit against LSU, but they could not throw the ball against LSU with LSU's elite secondary and pass coverage. But they went away from the running game, I thought, a little bit soon, and that helped LSU tremendously in that game as well.
I agree wholeheartedly. They definitely got
away
from it.
That was funny. I was DJing a wedding on Saturday, and we didn't have access to where we were. It was freaking the mountains. We didn't have access to, like, anything, to, like, internet, nothing. So everyone was like, hey, we're trying to figure out what's happening with the game. And so the guy, he's a huge Georgia Tech fan. He's like, Drew, I want you to get on the mic and say, hey, Georgia's losing. And I'm like, all right. So literally it was supposed to be a joke that Georgia was going to – we didn't even know the score of the game. And then I happened to look at the thing. I was like, man, third quarter, I was like, Georgia's actually getting beat for real. And then to see the end, it was like nuts. I was like, what? It was totally – like we were trying to make a joke of it, but it actually happened. Like they actually got beat bad, man. So it was just crazy to see that happening too because we were messing with some Georgia fans that were there, man. But it was crazy, man, that see they actually got that upset, man. So anyway – props to LSU. Congrats, Rob. Again, I love the fact that I get a chance to see my – what did you say, JQ?
Yeah, their resume, bro. Georgia, Auburn, and Miami. I mean, who has a better resume right now than LSU? And Florida, picking up steam and winning games only helps LSU, really, in terms of that being their loss. LSU has the best resume of any team in the country, I think.
Yeah.
They definitely played the toughest schedule in the country so far. And probably when it's all said and done, we'll probably have played the toughest schedule in college football this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, I love seeing my school for the Atlanta Falcons, man. So good. Keep it up, Rob. So we're going to keep an eye on the game, man. Watch the highlights, man. So I'm just watching my next player, Greedy Williams, man. Keep an eye on him, man. See how that plays out, man. I'm looking at the next Falcon quarterback. Yeah. Let's have some fun, man.
Dang.
We're having fun with this,
that's
man.
That's area me, too. I can really help.
Yeah. Come on, bring him on.
Got long arms too.
That's the type of quarterback we like, man. Long arm corners. Hopefully, he do better than your boy, Jalen. Anyway, Jalen Collins. Yeah. All right. Hey, let's have some fun here. Let's do some college football predictions here. We got number 6 Michigan and number 24 Michigan State. Wow. A little border battle. Should I let JQ take this, Rob, or should you?
Yeah. I'll take it first. I like Michigan on the road. I mean, Michigan State got a big win over Penn State this past weekend that we just talked about. But right now, I just think Michigan has turned the corner this year. They're really playing well. Shea Patterson, the offensive line, the running game, their defense is starting to come around, too. I like them on the road. I just think they're a much better team than Michigan State here in this game. I'm going to go 30-17, Michigan on the road.
I can take that. And you know, as much as I hate Michigan, I said in the summer that Michigan team scared me because he finally got his quarterback in Shea Patterson. And Shea Patterson with those wheels really just lit Wisconsin up. And he's established that Stanford identity in Michigan now. He's got a mobile quarterback that can make the throws and also deal with his legs. He's got a really good defense, and he's got a power run game with Higdon. And if you let them, you know, go to that recipe and that strategy and incorporate it, you're going to be on for a long day with Michigan right now. I hate to say that, but I think Michigan wins. I think Michigan wins by like 14 against Michigan State. Really do.
No apologies. Keep it going. Number 16, NC State at number 3, Clemson. Rob.
Hey, NC State's got a really good quarterback in Finley. He's got an opportunity to be a first-round quarterback. I mean, a first-round pick in this draft. But I think overall, I think Clemson here in the last couple of weeks is starting to get better and better. And I like for them to win this game by 2 touchdowns as well. I'm going to go 38-24, Clemson.
Yeah, there's no words I need for that. This is Clemson. The rest of the ACC is just there for them to be beat.
Yep, Clemson. Number 22, Mississippi State at number 5, LSU, Rob Barr. Are the Tigers going to be, like, riding that high? Are they going to be focusing on Mississippi State? What's going on, bro?
I tell you what, you know, you got a big win against Georgia. You know, Ed Orgeron has got to do a great job of keeping his team focused against a Mississippi State team. And really all he has to do is show them the tape from last year's game, because Mississippi State just kicked LSU's ass last year. So he's got to – if you just show them that tape, you got to keep this team motivated. You don't want a team, you know, to get lax after getting a big victory. So he needs to show them that game tape from last year and how Mississippi State just ran the ball down their throats and just kicked LSU's ass like 38-7 last year. But I like LSU at home. It's a night game, Death Valley. I'm going to go with the Tigers winning this game. I'm going to go 30-20 LSU.
I don't even think it's that close. Night of Death Valley, yeah, that's all I needed to hear. And you talk about last year's game, if you really want to be honest, all you got to do is show them the box score from this weekend's game and say, this is what can happen to you. Look what happened to these top 10 teams last week. And you think it can't happen to you, guess what? It can damn sure happen to you. I think they still start out a little sluggish because it's hard for 18, 19, 20-year-olds to get themselves up every week as much as fans. We look and say, how can you not be up for this game? They're still young. They still get all those attaboys and the pats on the back, and, you know, and they have to come back and play another team the next week. So I think they start off a little slow, but I think by the time the second half kicks in the gear, LSU will go ahead and just beat LSU over Mississippi State. That Dak Prescott years of being in the top five, that shit is over for Mississippi State. Sorry, Mississippi State. But that's over. I think let them stay around for a little bit, you know, until they get back to, you know, paying attention to detail, and they go ahead and pull away from Mississippi State in the second half.
Yep. Well, I hope it's not close, like you said. Hopefully LSU blows them away.
Don't do that. All right, number 12, Oregon. Willie Taggart, which he's back in Oregon. At number 25, Washington State. Finish, Rob.
Well, you got to give Oregon a lot of credit. A big win at home over Washington this week. I think they go ahead and sweep the Washington schools. I think they go on the road. Justin Herbert might be the best quarterback in college football. On pace to possibly be the number one quarterback in the draft. I like Oregon to go on the road and win this game by 2 touchdowns, 38-24, Oregon.
Hey, Dwayne Haskins wants to have a word with you, brother, about that Justin Herbert talk. Even though Justin Herbert is still a fantastic quarterback, so don't get mad at me out there in the Pacific Northwest. But he's phenomenal, and I am picking Oregon. Just that Mike Leach kind of, you know, gimmick that they're going to run, it's not going to work for Oregon. I think Oregon has turned the corner. And you talked about it, Rob, and you hit it spot on. They have changed the culture and the identity of that team. And it's not that, you know, let's run as plays as possible. They are coming downhill at you, smash mouth football. And I think they just have way too much talent for Washington State. You know, somebody's got to be number 25. You know what I mean? Like, you know, just toss some names in the bucket and throw it out, pick one. So I'm not going to get overly, you know, consumed with them being ranked number 25. I think Oregon is just a better team. I think they're playing a better brand of football right now. I think they also, you know, put the screws to Washington State by 14-plus points as well.
Yeah, that's the Mario Cristobal influence. He's a Nick Saban disciple. He likes a physical brand of football. He's a former offensive lineman himself back for the Miami Hurricanes when they were winning national championships on a regular basis. So he's bringing that kind of physicality mentality to that team, and that's what they're doing. I mean, they're a different style, and the Pac-12 is not used to that.
Nice. That's all right. Harbaugh left Stanford. Agreed.
Yep.
That's crazy. Yep. All right, guys, let's wrap this up here. The last game we're going to switch is we're going to talk briefly about basketball, get a little NBA action here. Obviously, the start of the season starting fairly quickly here. And so let's talk about who's going to join LeBron in L.A. this summer, Rob.
I tell you what, there's a lot of talk about Kevin Durant wanting to go to the Knicks, but I think eventually he's the guy that joins LeBron in Los Angeles. You know, they are still close, even though they've been competing against each other in NBA Finals. LeBron and Kevin Durant are still extremely close friends. They still hang out in the offseason. LeBron just talked about their relationship here recently here in the last couple of weeks. And to me, that's the sleeper. That's the sleeper. I think eventually, obviously I think he's going to win another championship with Golden State this year. But I think eventually he's going to say, hey, let's join forces. We're buddies. We've been friends for a long time. I think he is that guy that's going to eventually join the Lakers with LeBron.
Yeah. Wow. If the question was who's going to join this next summer, I'm going to say nobody. Because at some point, you got to look at what the people are telling you, and the proof is in the pudding. People have had the opportunity this past summer to join him in L.A., and they chose not to. The way you see Jimmy Butler trying to force a trade to the destinations that he wants, nobody's really doing that for LeBron. And I don't know if it's been playing in his shadow, or that's probably a big part of it. But I just don't see anybody, you know, beating the band to get to him. I agree to him, you know, at some point down the line, I think when they get closer towards the end, we're like, you know what, let's just effort. Let's just screw the league and just have our own posse team and just see what we can do. I can see that in a couple years, but I can't see that happening this year. But I can see it happening eventually. And you talk about Kevin Durant, because I feel like Kevin Durant will always feel like that Steph Curry's team. And, you know, it may always be LeBron's team as well, but if they get together, the hype and the story about that would be so ridiculous that it would eclipse it being Durant joining LeBron. It would be like, wow, Showtime is a real stupid match. If they get together and they have anything left in the tank once they both join forces. But this summer, I just don't think anybody's in a rush. I feel like people are in a rush to beat Golden State and beat LeBron. I don't feel like anybody's in a rush to join LeBron to beat Golden State, if that makes sense. So I feel like he went there. I think he kind of knows that at this point, and that's probably why he chose L.A., because they got some good young talent. He's hoping that one of those guys kind of pops, and everybody else can kind of fill in as really quality role players to him, and that guy that pops end up being the Batman and Robin. So I'm going to say nobody right now for next summer. I think it's going to have to be homegrown outside of LeBron for L.A. to get back to the pinnacle.
Yeah. All right. Good call on that, man. I love it, man. Hey, all right. Let's finish the strong here. Let's talk about the NBA season predictions here. So kick it off, Rob.
Well, I'm going to start with my NBA Finals prediction. Then I'll go down the line who I think is going to make the playoffs out of the Western and Eastern Conference. I'm going to say we got to look at the finals matchup of Golden State and Boston this year, which I think could be a very intriguing matchup. I think Boston is the only team in the NBA that is capable, if they're healthy, of possibly challenging Golden State and upsetting them in the finals, if they're healthy. When you talk about Kyrie Irving, when you talk about Jaylen Brown, when you talk about Jason Tatum, and you're getting Gordon Hayward back, you still have Al Horford and you still have a deep bench there in Boston. To me, they're the only team that I think that I see in the NBA this year that can possibly upset Golden State. I'm still going to predict that Golden State's going to win it all. I mean, they have the experience, and they still have the talent, as much as I hate them rascals, but I also hate Boston. But anyway, I got a roof. I think I hate Golden State more, though. But I think Golden State, in the end, will pull it out and beat the Celtics in the finals. I'm going to say Golden State in six to win the finals. Now, looking at the Western Conference here, I still think Houston is the second-best team in the conference, but I don't think Houston is going to be as good as they were last year. I think even with Carmelo Anthony, I think you're going to see them drop off a little bit. mean, he still got Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, Chris Paul, James Harden, still a loaded roster. But I think they're going to miss the defensive presence of Trevor Ariza. I think they drop off just a tad bit this year. Still, in my opinion, the second-best team in the Western Conference. I know you guys are going to call me a homer here, but at the end of last season, the Pelicans the Pelicans were the third-best team in the Western Conference, and I believe they stay there. Julius Randle and that offense is looking phenomenal. Drew Holiday played tremendously, and he's going to carry that over into this season as well. And then the added depth that they've added on the team as well. I still think they're the third-best team in the Western Conference. So pretty much the top five here, I don't really have any changes in the West. Utah was the fourth-best team. I think they're still the fourth-best team in the Western Conference. OKC was the fifth-best team. I still think they are the fifth-best team in the Western Conference. The Denver Nuggets, they got a lot of pieces on this team. They're going to score a lot of points. I don't know how well they're going to be defensively, but I have them in the sixth spot. The Lakers, you still got LeBron James. Stephen A. Smith seems to think they're going to move all the way up to the second-best spot in the Western Conference and be in the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. I'm just not there yet. But I do think LeBron James is going to, with this young team, is going to be an entertaining team to watch. I think they have potential to move up just because they have LeBron James. But right now I have them in the seventh spot. The 8th one was really tough here. It's either Portland or Minnesota. And, you know, we'll have our Oregon experts on the show next week. Maybe they can give us a little insight on the Trailblazers. But this one's really tough. I mean, Jimmy Butler, how much is that drama going to hurt this Timberwolves team? It's really hard for me to make a prediction on this team right now. Right now I'm going to give the slight edge to Portland being in the 8th spot in the Western Conference. I'll cover the East real quick. I talked about Boston, number one. I think Philly is number two. Toronto, I have them in the number three spot. Milwaukee, the Greek Freak, when are these teams going to turn it around? I think they're at least number four in the Eastern Conference this year. Indiana, you saw them improve tremendously last year. I have them at number five. Washington, it's a team that JQ has been predicting for years. I still have them in the number six spot. I have Miami at number seven. And I have Detroit with that front line at number eight in the Eastern Conference.
That's a fantastic breakdown. But I feel like everything else is pretty much a foregone conclusion, to be quite honest with you. And I'm not going to throw in the Lakers because I think they're still trying to figure it out. And they don't have enough pieces quite yet. Those guys still have to make more leaps. I don't think they're nowhere near going to be the number two with Stephen A. Smith. I would love that, but the objective part of me does not see that happening. It's going to take a little time to gel. That chemistry that you talk about so much, Dre, it's going to take some time to get there. So I agree with that with Rob. I think just being in the middle of the road in the Western Conference, the good thing for them is the fact that you have San Antonio with the injuries now that's going to hold them back. You got Minnesota with the drama that's going to hold them back. You look at Portland. I think Portland is who they are. It's going to be hard to have your two best players be in the backcourt and still be able to get you to where you want to be. For me, I think the finals in each one of the conferences are pretty much already set. I think it's Boston and Philadelphia in the East. I think it's Houston and Golden State in the West. I think it's going to end up being, like you said, Golden State and Boston. So it's a little bad for the NBA when you kind of foreshadow that with I think with a pretty decent level of certainty, you know, if you remove injuries from it. But LeBron didn't know it's going to bring, you know, viewership to the TV because, I mean, that preseason game versus Golden State, you know, outdrew some of the regular season games last year in terms of ratings. And just think about that. It's just a preseason game, and you're not even guaranteed to see those guys play for more than 15 minutes a game. And it still had, like, I forget the exact number, but it outdrew a lot of regular season games last year. Probably, you know.
On a Sunday night against football, too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that piece of it is always going to help them out. But to me, I think those are your final four. I think I could say that. I think most people say that with a pretty good degree of certainty and probability that those are going to be your four. And I think it's going to be Golden State again. They just, to me, haven't done anything to have me say they're going to step back. Oh, and then, you know, you got DeMarcus Cousins, who looks ahead of schedule, and shame on the Pelicans and the Lakers and everybody else that had a shot to go get him and let him go to Golden State. So if you lose to him, that's your fault for saying he wasn't going to be ready enough time because he's looking like he's going to be ready ahead of time. So to me, put Golden State again, and four is already set.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right. It's been fun.
Toronto's the only team capable of possibly crashing that Final Four and spoiling it. But other than that, I totally agree with JQ on that. The Final Four.
Ain't nobody
the same Final Four.
Ain't nobody betting on Toronto. We've seen the story before.
You did say that every playoffs, right?
Yeah, you've seen the story before. Until they do it, you can't pronounce it. It's just one of those things. They're like the Bengals. You're like, yeah, you can get hyped about it, but do you see them do it for real with the lights on? Nah.
Yep. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in to another great episode of Talking Sports with the 12th Man. We covered a lot today. We covered the NFL. We covered Major League Baseball. We covered college football. And we gave you your NBA preview. Make sure you write us. Let us know what you think of the show. Give us some feedback if you agree with our prediction, disagree, and tell us why as well. We look forward to hearing from you all. We'll be back on the air live on Tuesday night. So we got a little break here, about 9 days, Tuesday night, October 23rd. We'll come back to you live at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. I'm sorry, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Once again, you don't want to miss us in 9 days. Good night, people.
Yep. Now, outside all that, the NBA will be tipping off, and we'll have a lot more to talk about with baseball playoffs here heading to the World Series. And looking really forward to that. I've really been in tune here to the playoffs. It's been some great strategic matchups between some really quality managers here in baseball. So really excited about that. Thank you guys for tuning in to the regular portion of the show and downloading the link and listening to us in the OT. And like I said, if you're gonna come for us, you better come for us with some for real stats and a positive and for real point of view that's backed up, not just some feelings. Don't get any feelings. Bring us some stats and some hardcore evidence, and we'll be more than likely to respond to you on Facebook and Twitter and all those good things. So good night, everybody. Have a good week. Talk to you next week.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
Good night, people. NBA tips off on Tuesday night.
We're having fun. Sure. Again, it's been a pleasure sharing the field of battle with you guys, gentlemen. Have a great, great week. Again, we'll talk to you guys next Tuesday. Again, please be safe. I'm going to be driving to Alabama, so I'll give you a quick check into that, man. It's about what's happening with that, too, man. So I'll be ripping and running as always, man. But, yeah, it's going to be fun. But, yeah, let's have some fun. Get some rest for sure. Until the next show. We'll talk soon. Good night, people.
Good night.
Sure. Good night. Good night, boys.